Welcome back to the CJ Silas Show. One of my favorite friends in the business. In fact, the first time, I don't even know if you would remember this. One of the first times we did a show together face to face
was San Antonio.
Yes, San Antonio. And Dale Brown was sitting with us. And because of Dale Brown, John, Nolan Richardson and John Wooden both came up to us. And we literally got to talk to both of them unexpectedly, only because we had Coach Dale Brown there with us right alongside the river in San Antonio, Texas. He is John Feinstein on the CJ Silas Show. We kind of go way back, don't we?
More years than either you or I want to admit to, CJ, but it's always been fun.
You've been writing for over 30 years. I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I remember the first time I actually talked to you before I was even on the air was in the 90s when I got you on a show in Seattle with Mitch Levy. I was the guest booker then, and you've been so gracious.
Late Mitch Levy.
You've been so gracious to join me on all of my shows. It's a new book, and it sounds fantastic. I'm waiting on my copy, Backroads to March. And the last book that I read that I just fell in love with, and I like all the books, one of my favorites is Quarterback. And you dive deeper recently. I don't know if this is just my opinion. You're diving deeper, and you're getting a little bit more into heart stuff. Is that fair of me to say that
I think CJ, I've always my books have always been about people who just happen to be involved in sports, because sports has been my passion since I was a kid. But I think the reason the books have done as well as they've done is because you don't have to be a jock to appreciate the struggle. That's why I like this book, Backroads to March, so much, because it's not about Zion Williamson and his multi-million-dollar Nike contract or about any of the powers in college basketball. It's about players and coaches and kids who are involved in the game and love the game and are passionate about the game, but aren't going to have Dick Vitale screaming that they're about diaper dandies or where they're going to go in the lottery. They play college basketball, and they go to college, and most of them graduate from college and leave the sport behind with great regret. I wrote in the introduction that, to me, in many ways, this book is about a kid named Bjorn Broman, who played at Winthrop and was a four-year starter, scored exactly 1,000 points in his career. His last basket in his last game gave him 1,000 points. And in the Big South tournament, his team, Winthrop, was losing pretty badly to Charleston Southern, and he's diving on the floor and trying to make back cuts and do everything he can in the last couple minutes. And when the game was over, I said to him, "You're going so hard, you got no chance to win the game." He said, "I knew it was my last game, and I didn't want to stop playing until they made me." And I think that sums up who this book is about, is kids who don't want to stop playing until someone makes them.
Who are some of the programs, the schools that you researched and teams that you talked to that really had an effect on you when you wrote this one?
Well, there were a lot of them, CJ. I went and spent some time with Jim Calhoun, who's coaching a D3 school in West Hartford, Connecticut, the University of St. Joseph. 77 years old, been through cancer scares four times, and is as intense as he was when he was winning national championships at Connecticut. And the game I was at, he probably should have been thrown out three or four times, but the three officials combined weren't as old as he is, and so they didn't want to throw him out because he's a legend.
Right.
I spent time with Army, with a couple players, Tommy Funk and Matt Wilson, who just finished their careers last night, losing in the Patriot League tournament. I watched Tommy Funk on back-to-back possessions playing in Cameron Indoor Stadium steal the ball first from Zion Williamson, then from R.J. Barrett, to the point where Mike Krzyzewski was so angry that he had to call timeout. And I'm thinking, these are two guys who are going to be making millions of dollars in a year after playing 1 year of college basketball, and here's a kid going right at him who's going to be wearing a second lieutenant's uniform here in a couple of months. And the story, I think, that sums up the whole year for me, CJ, is about a guy named Griff Aldrich, who played Division III basketball at Hampton, Sydney, went to law school, became a hugely successful lawyer. He wanted to be a basketball coach, but he had $100,000 in student loans to pay back after law school. So he took a job in a law firm and eventually was making about $800,000 a year as a partner in a Houston law firm, but still missed basketball. So when his college teammate Ryan Odom got the job at UMBC, and the name UMBC is probably familiar because of their upset of Virginia, and I write about those kids and Ryan in the book, but he called Ryan and said, I want to coach. And Ryan said, well, I can hire you as my director of basketball operations and pay you $32,000 a year. So he quit his $800,000 a year job and went and coached in Baltimore from Houston. Wife and three kids moved with him, obviously, and then got hired at Longwood University. And I always ask people when I speak, tell me where Longwood is, because it's in Farmville, Virginia. And when I went down to spend the day with Griff and his team, they were playing High Point. Ironically enough, the coach at High Point now is Cubby Smith,
wow,
who won a national championship at Kentucky. So as Griff pointed out that afternoon, you had Tubby with 606 wins and a national title, coaching against Griff with 12 wins, period.
Wow.
And during that game, my wife sent me a text saying, I forget where you are tonight. When are you going to be home? And I texted back, and I said, I'm in Farmville, Virginia. I'll be home about midnight. And she texted right back and said, you're having an affair. There's no such place as Farmville, Virginia. So that chapter is called Yes, Christine, There Is a Farmville.
I love it.
Sums up my travels pretty well, I think.
He is John Feinstein. He's been writing for over 30 years, over 30 books. You've read him in the Washington Post. You've seen him on the Golf Channel. You heard him on Sirius, NPR, ESPN, and I am so lucky that he's a friend of the CJ Silas Show. How did you find the stories that you wrote about?
Really, just all my years, as you mentioned, I've been doing this a long time, and I've met a lot of people, and there were stories I knew I wanted to. I knew I wanted to go see Griff Aldridge because I'd known him at UMBC, and I knew he had a story to tell. And I knew I wanted to go and see a kid named Seth Towns at Harvard because I'd written a column about him a couple of years earlier in which he quoted Emerson. And I think I can say without much hesitation, he's the first and last athlete I've ever interviewed who quoted Emerson, who wasn't talking about Roy, the old Australian tennis player. He was talking about Emerson Harvard class of 1821. And as I went along, I encountered stories that perhaps I wasn't expecting at the start of the season. And somebody would say, you ought to go talk to this guy. You ought to go see this team play. And so I kind of gathered stories as I went, in addition to the ones that I knew were going to be there before the season started. But I've been through a few college basketball seasons, and I think that allowed me to at least have a starting point, and then I just kind of went from there.
His newest book is Backroads to March, a couple of my favorites, Caddy for Life and A Season on the Brink, and I wanted to ask you about that. Bob Knight just went back to Indiana for the first time, and it was kind of an emotional experience, and a lot of people watched it. There was a lot of eyes on it. What did you feel and think when you watched him go back to Indiana?
Well, I was glad he finally did it. He was fired almost 20 years ago and spent most of the last 20 years trying to get the last word on Miles Brand, who was the president who fired him. And Miles Brand died in 2009, and Bob was still trying to get the last word. That's who he is. He always has to have the last word, whether it's with a referee, with a media member, or with the guy who fired him. And I thought it was very sad when he skipped the reunion of his 1976 team, the last team that went undefeated in college basketball. And I was glad to see him go back. He's not well, as you could see watching him during that ceremony at halftime of that game. And I'm glad he got back there before it was too late.
He is John Feinstein on the CJ Silas Show, best-selling author, amazing radio voice, fantastic interview. I'm glad to have him. One thing you wrote about recently in the Washington Post, which I thought was really interesting, was Patrick Chambers, the head coach at Penn State. He's been there now 9 years. We're pretty sure he's going to the NCAA tournament. Last year, he didn't even have a win with his team in January last year, and Penn State has only been to the postseason 3 times, and it looks like he's having a lot of fun this year. What was it like talking to Patrick Chambers with this great year he's having at Penn State?
Well, Pat is another of those guys I've known a long time. He's a Philly guy. I've lived in New York and Washington most of my life, either New York as a kid, Washington as an adult. But as a sports fan, in spite of all the jokes people make about Philly, especially when it comes to college hoops, I consider myself a Philly guy. I love the Big Five. The Palestra is somebody just wrote a really great review of this book in the Wall Street Journal in which it said the Palestra is the main character. And he's not far wrong. To me, that building is everything that's good about college hoops. And, you know, there's that little sign when you walk in the building on the concourse that says very simply, to win the game is great, to play the game is greater, but to love the game is the greatest of all. And you might say that's a cliche. I guess it is. It's corny. But I get a chill every time I'm standing in front of that plaque. And Patrick is a Philly guy. Grew up there, played high school ball there, played for the great Herb McGee at Philadelphia University. And five of his players are from Philadelphia, not a coincidence. And they have been the key to Penn State's turnaround. Penn State's a brutally hard job. Think about this. There have been years when one Penn State football game outdrew the entire home basketball season there. And he's managed to turn it around, and they will be in the NCAA tournament, and good for him.
About the book, let's get back to that. Do you do book signings anymore? Do you get to go out and meet the people that are buying it, or is that just a thing of the past?
No, you don't do them. In the old days, when you went to every city where you were promoting a book, I remember when I did A Season Inside, which was my second book, coming right out of Season on the Brink, they booked me in 20 cities in 16 days.
Oh, wow.
To the point where there were moments I didn't know what city I was in. But part of every city was to go to a bookstore and do a book signing. And some of them were hugely successful. And the one I remember most, though, from A Season Inside was I was at the Miami Book Fair. And when I arrived, they're telling you where to go. And they said, oh, you're on the Children's Alley. And I said, the Children's Alley? And I said, well, it's a sports book.
Oh,
okay. So they lined up the six authors for the Children's Alley. The other five were women who had written books like Goodnight Moon. So here come parents with their 2 and 3 year old kids, and I'm sitting there all by myself until finally a guy comes up and says, you're John Feinstein, right? And I said, yeah, thank God somebody recognized me. Yes, I am. And the guy says, so you're the Miami Heat mascot?
No.
And I said, what? And he said, well, right here in the program, it says 4 o'clock, John Feinstein, Miami Heat mascot.
Come on.
And they had apparently decided that while I was speaking later in the day, to keep the kids occupied, they were going to have the Miami Heat mascot perform, only they left out the semicolon in the program.
Oh, my gosh.
So when the guy found out I was not the Miami Heat mascot, he had no interest in buying a book either.
You've never told me that story before.
Some book signings are better than others, but I still do some. I did one here in Washington at the same independent bookstore where I did my very first book signing back in 1986 for Season on the Brink. And I just spoke last night at the Philadelphia Free Library and signed books afterwards. So I still do them. I enjoy them. You make a good point about meeting people because, especially at this point in my career, a lot of people will come and say, I read this book, I love that book, and it's a lot of fun to still do.
He is John Feinstein, the latest book, Back Roads to March. What's next?
What's next is a book completely different than anything I've ever done, but something I've wanted to do for a while because I think it's an important issue. I'm going to do a book about race in sports because I think race is still, unfortunately, the elephant in the room in our society. And if you just go back to the anthem protests a couple years ago and how polarizing they were, you know that it's still an issue that makes people very squirmy and nervous, and most white people don't want to hear about it. But it's there, and most African Americans are very aware of it and very willing to talk about it. And I look at the whole Lamar Jackson thing and the way all these old white scouts and general managers and TV pundits just kind of wrote Lamar Jackson off, and had these four white quarterbacks who were drafted in the top 10, and it took an African-American general manager, Ozzie Newsome in Baltimore, to draft Jackson, or he wouldn't have even gone in the first round. And I think he's done pretty well. As he likes to say, I'm pretty good for a running back. And there are so many different issues and stories to tell and stories that African-American athletes and coaches have to tell, and I've just begun the research, but even now it's already been fascinating.
Right. Before I let you go, I know what a baseball purist you are. We've been talking about baseball forever. Probably that might have been one of the first things we ever did talk about. And this Houston Astros cheating scandal has just consumed the preseason. It's consumed everything going on in spring training. And I really believe that they should have found a way to take the rings and the trophy and take the name out of the record books and just have it be blank for 2017. When this whole thing went down, what did you think of the way Manfred handled it?
I think he should be fired. Other than that, I thought he handled it great. what you just said about finding a way to take away the championship, the rings, the banner, the trophy itself, you don't have to find a way. You just do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not like the excuse making about the immunity because of the players' union. And the question I would ask is, how'd the other 29 teams feel about giving those guys immunity? Because the union supposedly represents all 30 teams, not just one team that's in trouble. But in terms of taking away the championship, all Manfred had to do was just say, this is what we're doing. And when he sits up there and says that the trophy is just a piece of metal, what that says to me is he doesn't know anything about baseball. There are a million things you could criticize Bud Selig for, but he genuinely loved baseball. I think Rob Manfred's just a lawyer who got into a job that pays him a lot of money and likes getting paid a lot of money. I don't think he's a baseball fan.
No, definitely not. I also wanted all the bonuses to go back to some sort of charity. Take the bonuses from all the guys, anything that you got for going to the World Series. But obviously you and I don't have any say because...
Well, yeah, that's for sure. But if you don't punish people, then why should they have any regret or remorse? And one of the biggest problems with this deal is that everybody sits there and it's pretty clear that the only thing the Astros have any regret about at all is getting caught. That's what's made it so bad. Is that one of the many things that's made it so bad is the other players are sitting there going, these guys don't care. Why should they? No one's punishing them.
So crazy. The book is called Backroads to March. He is the author. He's John Feinstein joining the CJ Silas Show. I always appreciate your time, your perspective. I hope the family's well, and take care of yourself.
Thanks, CJ. Always good to talk to you.